You've heard the headlines. Get some perspective now with Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Yep, it is Thursday, and there is a lot of development and moving parts when it comes to the future of Hacienda Healthcare. We kick the show off with that this morning.
The Lead, brought to you by Burge Ford, off the U.S. 60 and Mesa Drive.
All right, so Hacienda Healthcare, you know, the care facility where a woman who had been in a vegetative state for at least 2 decades gave birth after Christmas. Well, that facility has now been told by not one, but 2 state agencies that they need to find, place, and pay for a third-party manager. Now, they made that decision after determining that more than one patient at Hacienda is endangered and immediate corrective action is required. We have Steve Irvin from ABC 15 in with me again this morning. And Steve, we've got a lot of moving parts on this development. It's not just about the state agencies. There are several other things that are now taking place at Hacienda Healthcare after that woman gave birth to a baby. And we know she was raped, sexually assaulted. Investigations are going on. We don't know who did it, but there are problems at this facility, and the state is taking some pretty strict action.
You kind of wonder what's happening inside, because this letter that said people are endangered, that immediate correction action is needed, that came out a week and a half ago, and then yesterday, the state comes down and says, no, you have to hire this manager. And what's interesting is this is an order. This is not a recommendation. That's not a request. Hacienda's response, we've taken the letter under advisement, the board considering the best possible option forward. Again, this is an order. This is something that you have to do. But it certainly raises questions about what's happening inside Hacienda Healthcare, because we've heard from lots of folks that are inside this facility who say, look, there are all kinds of new rules. Patient care may be suffering. A lot of people, it's almost like chaos inside the facility, and you have to wonder whether the state needs to step in and take stronger action. I don't know what the state needs to do that's stronger than what they've already done. This is an order saying you've got to bring in somebody from the outside to take a look at things.
And if you don't, then really, in all honesty, your funding is in jeopardy, because 92% of the funding that Hacienda Healthcare receives is from Medicaid. So it comes from the state. But you may be shocked to find out, I was, when I read this latest report coming out of Channel 3 and Channel 5, that Hacienda Healthcare is not in jeopardy of losing their state license. You know why? Mm-mm. They don't have one.
Interesting.
Let that sink in for a second. Former director of the Arizona Department of Health Services, Will Humble, is telling them that Hacienda Healthcare is specifically exempt by statute. Apparently, this happened back in the late 90s. He doesn't know exactly why or how it all came to be. But he said, interestingly, that's part of the equation here as state government tries to figure out what to do about their regulatory role as part of the investigation. You can't yank a license that doesn't exist.
Yeah, on top of all of this, Hacienda is also requesting, or state is requesting, pregnancy and STD testing for all Hacienda Healthcare patients. Can you imagine being a family of a patient inside this facility, somebody who is incredibly vulnerable? Most of the people inside this facility are in a vegetative state. They're comatose. They need a maximum level of care, really unable to care for themselves or even speak for themselves. And so you have to wonder what's really going on inside this facility, and especially going back, knowing that the state has investigated Hacienda before for overbilling Medicaid and supposedly overbilling Medicaid by $3 or $4 million in a single year. So when you look at all of these things that are happening, you have to wonder how much oversight has there really been, and is the state now overkilling it, I guess, to make sure that there aren't any additional problems. At this point, you know, the cat's out of the bag. We know that there are problems inside. Is the state doing what it should have done years ago?
I think it is. And I don't see it as overkill at this point in time. If you need to go, you know, all hands on deck for a while to see really, truly, honestly what you're dealing with and then pull back as needed. That's fine. I have zero problem with that. And right now, that appears to be what the state is doing, as you have both the Arizona Department of Economic Security, as well as the Director of Access here, saying that there has to be this third-party manager that gets put in place. They're saying the Hacienda Healthcare has a week to find who this institution, this person, this facility would be. And then they have another week to get them in place. They got 2 weeks to make this happen. Yeah. And not just 2 weeks to make this happen. It's coming on their own dime. Like, they got to pay for this. They've got to oversee this. They've got to make this happen. Now, if they choose not to, Steve, because as you pointed out a little bit earlier, Hacienda hears what the state says and says, yeah, we'll take it into consideration.
I'm surprised by that reaction. I really am. Given the tight timeline and given all of the trouble that they're in already, it sounds like there are a lot of lawyers involved at this point. And lawyers can get involved, and sometimes that means that families get left out in the cold as well. I mean, the parents have already come out saying Hacienda has not apologized to us for what happened, the parents of this woman who was sexually assaulted. That has to be lawyers at work as well. Hacienda not wanting to admit any fault or any guilt here by simply issuing a basic apology. The decent person in me, I think the decent person a lot of people, says, look, at least you can say we're sorry, because obviously something happened here, something terrible happened here, and there's some culpability on the part of Hacienda.
Obviously, there's a baby. We can prove that something bad happened here. So, yes, they are owed an apology. But I would agree with you that the fact that they haven't received one is because somebody somewhere is saying, don't apologize. If you apologize, you're admitting guilt. Well, we already kind of know that somebody is guilty. Phoenix police trying to figure out exactly who that is. Then we have former Maricopa County Attorney Rick Romley, who's trying to figure out what is going on. It appears to be security-wise inside of Hacienda Healthcare. And then you've got these two state agencies saying, find a third-party manager and get them in place within 2 weeks. You start to feel the squeeze, and the squeeze is warranted. The squeeze is needed. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's too much. I get that the family wants an apology. It would be nice to have. It is the right thing to do. At the end of the day, I don't think it means much. And I agree that these actions that are taking place mean more, and that it's lawyers that are telling them not to apologize. We all know that this was wrong.
Yeah.
And they're owed an apology. But does an apology really do anything?
No, I don't think it does. It obviously doesn't change anything. But at the same time, you have to wonder, people want answers on what happened here. They want answers on the conditions that were in that place before there was so much spotlight on it. And now you have Rick Romley hired by Hacienda to go over their books, to go over their security procedures, to go over patient procedures. And now we're going to bring in a third party manager. Does that muddy the waters? Does that really get us to the point where the parents and the families of people who are in Hacienda are really going to get some answers and really know that their loved ones are safe? I have to wonder. You know, it seems like we've got a lot of managers in the business right now, and I just don't see that leads to a lot of answers that people want right now.
It's playing catch up. They're playing catch up. And this should have been done, I feel, a long time ago, but it wasn't. A tragedy happened, a horrific crime happened, and now, well, hurry up, do something, because it wasn't done before. Hey, you know what? The Lead is brought to you by Burge Ford, off the US 60 and Mesa Drive, online at burgeford.com. Terrorism in the Valley? ISIS? What the heck is going on in Fountain Hills?
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Well, you know, you heard Bob McClay just talk about it right there. A guy was shot in Fountain Hills about a week or so ago, and now he's being accused of terrorism by working with ISIS?
740, he just called and told Rock with me. I got one at gunpoint in the parking lot. 740, he's got a knife coming at me. 740, 998, 999.
Okay, so what you were hearing right there is the police radio call, 998, call for immediate assistance, 999, shots fired. This guy was apparently throwing rocks and came at the officer with a knife after he had called MCSO wanting to speak with a deputy.
Yeah, he showed up at the substation right there in front of Fountain Hills Town Hall and said he wanted to speak with a deputy. Deputy comes out. He starts throwing rocks at the deputy, and then he pulls out a knife and charges the deputy, and you can hear on this radio call, the deputy's going, he's throwing rocks, now he's coming at me with a knife, and then the call that shots are fired. The deputy defended himself and shot this guy. He survived, and yesterday we learned that the state has now filed state terrorism charges against him, and the exact language is managing, assisting, directing ISIS in some way, and then there's a separate charge of simply engaging in terrorism in the state. And so many questions arise out of this. What exactly does it mean, helping or assisting or managing ISIS? Was he in contact with ISIS? Did he email them? Was he inspired by ISIS? Was he on ISIS websites? Was he radicalized online, like we hear so many stories? It's difficult to tell, and we really don't know the facts here. But when you hear the word terrorism and you hear the word ISIS, and then you hear it
Fountain Hills.
In a place like Fountain Hills, where you maybe the last place you'd ever expect to hear that, it does raise a lot of questions, and it certainly is a reminder that this kind of radicalization can happen nearly anywhere if the charges are true.
But exactly, and I don't think they're just going to like trump up charges. That's not how my brain works. But I need to know more.
Yeah.
I need to know more, because when you have an 18-year-old named Ismail Hamid, who intentionally or knowingly did provide advice, assistance, direction, or management to the terrorist organization, and then he was also facing a second count of terrorism for attacking the officer. You're going, well, what happened?
Yeah.
What more? You know, when I hear rocks and knives, it seems, I mean, you can do a lot of damage with both. Please, I'm not trying to downplay it. But when I think of ISIS, that's not necessarily where my mind goes. Were you planning some sort of an attack here in the valley? Like you said, Steve, was it getting online, you know, sending emails, corresponding with, which isn't okay, but I need more. Yeah. I need more, and I understand that it takes time to get these kinds of details out. We live in a society where you want information yesterday. Mm-hmm. There's still more to figure out, but when you hear ISIS, Fountain Hills, it doesn't jive with the image that you have, even if just here in the valley.
No, it doesn't jive with what we think of as terrorism either. But
right.
It does fit the ISIS MO, because the basic idea here has been that ISIS goes out and they radicalize people in quiet communities all over the country, and then they pull off these random attacks. And so the point of terrorism is to terrorize. It's to scare us. It's to keep us from going out of our house. It's to make us afraid. And what better way to do that than to radicalize random people who may pull off an attack anywhere, anytime, in any place, so that you never know what's coming next. And it is a scary prospect, but at the same time, you know, is it something that we should necessarily be worried about? If it's so unpredictable, what do you do about it?
Yeah, but you say random time and random place. The guy showed up.
Yeah.
At an MCSO substation. I mean, my mind goes, if you were really trying to create terror here in the valley, you don't go to a police substation to make it happen. Unfortunately, we talk a lot about soft targets. You know, there are so many places where if you really want to scare people, you can go. Hence the reason why when you go to a Cardinals game, us ladies now need to have like a clear bag to get in places, right? It seems ridiculous and stupid, but you also understand why it's there, because it has happened in the past and they're trying to prevent it again in the future.
Yeah, my mind goes to the idea that this guy's an idiot, because this is not a soft target. I mean, an armed police officer who's trained to deal with the threat and is more than willing to
deal
with that threat with deadly force, that's not exactly a soft target, especially when you call him and let him know you're coming.
Now, he was shot. Yep, he was shot, treated at the hospital, But, you know, deputies fine, things along those lines. But it is suspect. You know, the story came out about a week or so ago, and we heard about, you know, the officer involved shooting in Fountain Hills, because anytime an officer fires the weapon in the valley, it gets a lot of attention because there were so many of them last year, and there seems to be more of them happening this year. So you're going to pay attention. And then it kind of like died off a little bit. And then you had these charges that were filed, and you used the word terrorism, and you use the word ISIS. Now you're getting people's attention. You have my attention, but I still need a little bit more, because I'm with you thinking this doesn't seem like a radicalized person who was on their way to Syria to help build the caliphate. This sounds like an idiot.
Yeah, it sounds like somebody, they probably found something on his computer or something on his phone that indicated that he had at least tried to make contact with some radical element somewhere along the line, and hence the charges. We do know that the FBI has been contacted. We've been told that the FBI is taking point on the investigation. But it's important to note that these are state charges. And so you have to wonder what the federal involvement really is, whether they were tracking this guy, whether there's more to this, or whether it's just one guy who got some really bad ideas and decided to do something and obviously didn't do it in the smartest way.
To say the least. Hey, you know what? You can subscribe to the Bruce St. James Pamela Hughes Show podcast right now. iPhone, Android, never miss a thing. Brought to you this week by Stampede Plumbing. Power. It's one of those things where when you have it, you don't want to give it up and you will fight to keep it. That appears to be what's happening right down at the state legislature. We're talking about legislative immunity. I think it's pointless, but the lawmakers who have it are going to do whatever they can to hold on to it. We're going to talk about that coming up next here on KTAR News.
KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
We don't need much perspective to understand that when somebody is in a position of power or they have power, they will do whatever it takes to hold on to it. And we know that our lawmakers, our elected political heroes, they got some power here.
Heroes
in the
state. A strong word.
I'm using that tongue in cheek. All right. Come on now, Steve. Steve Irvin there again from ABC 15 joining me today. And you, like I, was watching the State of the State address with Governor Ducey last week. And if you were listening to it here on KTAR versus watching it on ABC 15, you may have gotten a bit of a different perspective on one specific topic that the governor spoke about. It was this. Take a listen.
And how about we start with eliminating the most unnecessary law of them all, legislative immunity. We are a nation of laws, not men. No one, not me, nor you, is above the law.
Now, as I'm driving in my car and I'm listening to that, I'm going, yeah, I'm with the governor
about
on
time,
this.
About time, sure.
But when you were watching it on ABC 15, what did you see when the governor said that?
It was, yay, oh, that's great. It was a lukewarm, kind of a tepid response from legislators. And as we're finding out now, a lot of these legislators are saying, maybe we don't want to give up this legislative immunity, not necessarily. And it's across the board, too. It's Republicans, it's Democrats, and they're saying, no, we really should be exempt from certain laws during the legislative session, even though we've never had a case where a lawmaker was actually impeded from a vote or any of the reasons behind this law. It's never happened in the state of Arizona. I mean, this was something that was put in our Constitution in 1912, and who knows what they were thinking in 1912.
Right, exactly.
But we're sort of emerging from the wild, wild west at that point. And the idea was that some senator, you know, coming from the outskirts of Phoenix, and at that point it was probably 7th Street in Van Buren, and they're in their horse and buggy, and the county constable pulls them over and keeps them from voting on a really important vote. And because of that, we need immunity from these laws. That's never happened. And the interesting thing to me is that isn't this sort of a slap in the face to law enforcement? By keeping this law in the books and saying that we really need this, are we saying that law enforcement would do that today, that they would pull somebody over for political reasons to keep them from voting? I think it's just incredibly far-fetched, and we've seen the law abused.
State Representative Vince Leach out of Tucson says that the whole idea of this protection is to keep a police officer or a sheriff's deputy from detaining one or two lawmakers whose votes are needed. You could render our legislature non-functional. Really? Because the only time I hear legislative immunity being used is not because we've got crazy law enforcement trying to stop a vote down at the Capitol. I hear it, Steve, when it is crazy lawmakers trying to get away with something. Oh, I don't know. Like Paul Mosley. Remember this guy out of Lake Havasu? You don't remember? Let's go to the body cam footage, shall we?
You were driving 130 earlier, you said?
Yeah, I go 130, 140, 120. Yeah, I come down, I was going 120 almost. You know, there was no traffic.
Yeah, this guy bragging about going 120, 130 when you and your family are on a freeway. And, oh, yeah, well, you know what? I can do it. You didn't catch me when I was going 150. Luckily, the people of Lake Havasu came to their senses and did not re-elect him. But when that story first broke, we had Colonel Frank Milstead, director of DPS, on the air to talk about the challenges that his troopers go through in this situation.
Sure.
Because there is that assumption that, like, his troopers, they're going to try to stop one of these legislators. And here's what Colonel Milstead had to say.
I think it would be great to have some clarity for Arizona law enforcement on what to do, because when you do run across somebody with the temerity of Mr. Mosley, it would be nice to be able to do something to change that braggadocious attitude of what they can and can't do during the session.
This guy's going 120 miles an hour down the freeway on I-17, in one of the most dangerous sections of I-17, we should add as well. And literally, he gets pulled over. They can't give him a ticket. And if he wants to, he can get right back on the road and crank it right back up to 100 miles an hour. That's dangerous. It's incredibly dangerous. And it's certainly not what this law is intended for. And he's not the only case. There have been a couple of other cases over the years in 2011 and 2012 where lawmakers were accused of hitting their girlfriends or hitting their significant others, basically domestic abuse allegations.
On the side of the road!
And they pleaded legislative immunity. In one case, in 2012, I believe, or 2011, I believe it was, the altercation was on the side of the road. She went to jail. He went home.
Mm-hmm.
Because of legislative immunity. And I think people have seen these cases and they say, look, this is being abused. This is not being used for what it's intended to be used for. And what it's intended for has never happened in the state of Arizona. There's no need for this law on the books. The counter argument, and this is coming from Republicans and Democrats, is that, well, it's in the Constitution. So we've got to have it. It's in the Constitution. There are more than a few things in the state Constitution that the legislature has sort of skirted or really not paid attention to.
You remember how, like higher education, you know, near as free as possible.
Yeah,
college,
general, uniform schools. No mention of charter schools in the Constitution either.
But you bring up the Constitution, and it was House Speaker Rusty Bowers. Rusty Bowers. I mean, that's like so Arizonan. I love it. Rusty Bowers, our House Speaker,
now
right?
One of the most powerful people in the state.
Absolutely. And he is one who is saying it was put there for a reason by the people. It's in the Constitution.
To give up immunity that was given me by the Constitution, I take that very seriously. There's a reason for it, and I want that reason protected, not abused.
Mr. Bowers, please explain to me, what is the reason? What reason do you need legislative immunity? If we have law enforcement running rampant, pulling over lawmakers, preventing votes from taking place, I want to know. I think we here at KTAR need to get that story on the air.
We would certainly put it on the air.
Absolutely we would. And you also think that, like, in today's day and age, with social media and the reach that things go, where if you have somebody going rogue that we don't know about it?
Yeah.
It's going to know. Because you know what? If a lawmaker is prevented from making a vote because they were pulled over, even if it was for speeding, even if they were speeding, but they were going to, you know, create this kerfuffle over the fact that they got pulled over. They could make that kerfuffle known without even calling KTAR or ABC 15. They could just go on their Twitter feed. We would know about it. So I am standing with the governor on this. And what we find out is that, you know, with these lawmakers kind of going against it, it's possible that we, yes, us, will have the opportunity to vote if it'll be put on a ballot for us to repeal.
I think that's the only way it gets repealed, because I don't think he's got the votes in the legislature right now to do this.
So we want to hear from you, our listeners. If you have the opportunity to vote to repeal legislative immunity here in the state of Arizona and amend our state constitution, would you? And why? 602-200-2733. 602-200-2733. It is our open mic line, brought to you by Carol Royce with Keller Williams Realty East Valley. Well, we got the biggest, the list of the trends in baby names last year. And I got to tell you, you guys are naming your kids some weird things. We'll tell you what they are next here on KTAR News.
Say my name. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes. KTAR News on 92.3 FM.
You know, you can learn a lot from a name, someone's name. But, you know, Pamela, kind of average. I've got Steve Irvin from ABC 15.
Kind of average.
Steve, kind of average, kind of right there in the middle. Like, no one's going to go, you're named Steve?
What the heck were your parents thinking?
Right, exactly. But chances are you've ran across someone, you're like, wow, okay. Well, you know what? We have the hottest baby name trends of last year. And when I look at this, I say, what the heck are some of you thinking naming your kids these things?
Yeah, we've got baby names that are inspired by Fortnite.
Oh,
and,
gosh.
And baby names inspired by healthy eating.
Healthy eating?
Naming your children after vegetables. So some of the interesting, so if you play Fortnite, or if you have a child who plays Fortnite, some of these probably sound familiar. Ramirez, the name okay. Leviathan is up 46% for boys.
Leviathan.
46%. Now, that could mean that there were two kids named Leviathan, and now there are three kids named Leviathan. I mean, exactly. You know, it's a
percentage
there.
Levi's one thing, yeah. But Leviathan because of Fortnite?
Bunny. Bunny is apparently a character on Fortnite.
There's a joke. 30%. There's a joke in there. I'm just not going to go with
it. I'm like, you have cursed your child. You've cursed your child.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. You know, I think when a parent names their child, they should really consider the middle school ridicule that is going to take place in a mere 10 years for that poor child. Rogue has gained 47%. Dakota, another character on
I've
Fortnite.
Heard Dakota before, but like
Dakota's
you're going rogue.
Yeah.
You know, when I picked out Riley for my daughter, you know, it was popular. It's still kind of one of those popular names, but it's not off the wall weird. And my husband and I went through the what's it going to sound like when she's a baby? What's it going to sound like when she's in middle school as a teenager? What's it going to sound like when she's an adult? Because Bunny's kind of cute when they're a little kid. You know, oh, look, hi, Bunny. Yeah. You know, and you laugh and you giggle and this, that, and the other. But as they get older, it's a little, if it's a nickname, it's one thing. You know, if somebody, you know, your dad called you Bunny and now everybody calls you Bunny, mm-hmm. whatever. That's one thing. But if that is your name, what if your name... You said like fruits and vegetables. The first time I had ever heard of this, you got to go back well over a decade. Gwyneth Paltrow, remember when she named her daughter Apple?
Everybody thought that was weird.
It is
weird.
But now we see your Apple.
It's not so weird.
And we raise you a kale.
A kiwi.
Maple.
Clementine. Saffron.
I feel like I'm making dinner or something right now.
I know. Did you just go through the spice rack and go, that sounds cool, let's do that one.
Now, Rosemary, that's kind of like a throwback name.
That's an old name,
that is
yeah.
a throwback
Sage
name.
Sage has been around for a while.
Yeah, yeah. So some of these, you know, the old becomes new again and so on and so forth. But then you have names that, do you really want to burden your child with that for the rest of their life? When you name your child Kanye.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Kanye rose 22% on the boys list. Kanye rose further up the list, Steve, than Kim.
People are naming their children the same names that Kanye and Kim Kardashian have named. So Stormy is up 63%. Dream, Black China's daughter, is 42%. Nori, who's the that's the nickname for North, the daughter of Kim Kardashian and Kanye West, 14% up. I have to think, you know, years down the road, will it really matter? Will it really matter when other kids make fun of them? Will other kids make fun of them? Or will there be a bunch of other Kanyes running around?
Or does everybody just cool have name? A crazy name? And it's like, who do you make fun of? Because everybody's name is just out there.
Were these kids named before Kanye went off the rails? I mean, realistically.
You gotta be careful nowadays. Like, really, what do you want to put on your child for the rest of their life? I mean, when you're going through and you're trying to pick out the name for your kid, it's hard.
Right.
You know, before we knew whether we were having a boy or a girl, I wanted to know. I'm a control freak. I wasn't like, we're leaving this up to chance and I'll find out when the baby's delivered. I want to know, am I having a girl or am I having a boy? But prior to that point, you know, we played with it. What would a boy's name be? What would a girl's name be? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were some like, No. You can't name whatever because, that kid picked on me when I was in elementary school. And somebody has like a bad connotation
sure.
with it.
And
but when you
parent,
do it on a celebrity level, it's going to happen.
Every parent wants their kid to be extra special. Every parent wants their kid to be unique. They want them to stand out. They want that name to be the thing that everybody remembers them for. And I have to wonder, are you cursing your child or are you truly making them stand out by giving them a trendy name? Keep in mind, trends are trends. For a reason. 10 years from now, 20 years from now, that may not seem like such a great trend or such a great idea. So I'm more of a fan of the classic names. That's just me.
I still can't get over, and it might be one person, and so now we're actually registering on the list.
Yeah, but celebrities are going the opposite way.
But why would you name your kid Kale? And I like Kale. I'm weird. I actually like kale.
Yes.
There ain't no way I'm naming my kid it.
I like kale when it's mixed with fattening stuff.
Like bacon?
Like bacon. Kale and bacon is outstanding.
Okay, this is my son Kale and this is my daughter Bacon. Okay, that's weird. Yep. Yeah, yep. No.
It's great like combo, though.
Oh, yeah, in a salad, maybe. Not for a family. Oh, man, we got another officer-involved shooting. So why did officers in Tempe, or an officer, shoot a kid with an airsoft gun? Now we're going to dive into that. I think there's still a lot of questions that still need to be answered, and that story coming up next on KTAR News.